Oh yeah, I talked about it in the Book of Mormon suck episode because I wish that's how.
Wait. The correction: the Book of Mormon movies.
Book of Mormon videos suck. Yeah, sorry. Wow.
Thank you for that correction. Yeah. Redaction immediately.
Please bless our refreshments to give us strength in our bodies.
Hello and welcome to Bless the Refreshments, where normal people have normal conversations about the gospel, making it way more fun and interesting to be a member of the church. So, you know those questions in Sunday school that the teacher asks you, which is the most obvious question about the most overly taught subject? And you know how annoying that is? Well, that's inadvertently what we ended up doing in this episode, and that question is, who were Laman and Lemuel? But it turns out to be a fascinating discussion. We're chatting about who they are and following them on their journey to who they become. And it got so interesting that we're actually splitting this episode into two. So here's part one of the character arc of Laman and Lemuel. Hope you enjoy. All right. We thought it'd be interesting today to do an episode about a story that we all know, but probably told from the different perspective than what we're used to. We thought it would be fun and interesting to go at 1st Nephi and a first part of 2nd Nephi, but examine the character arc of Laman and Lemuel. You know, were they just a thorn in Nephi's side? What we can learn from them? How even sometimes do we relate to them? I've taken the perspective of how am I more like Laman and Lemuel than I am like Nephi? Like it, when I was in primary, it was all about, yeah, I'm like Nephi, you know, Laman and Lemuel are the worst. But sometimes I think that and I think, oof, I don't know if I like this comparison so much. So yeah, that's what we talked about today. The character arcs of Laman and Lemuel, how they changed throughout, you know, 1st and 2nd Nephi and how they ended up where they ended up.
So Johnny, I'll start with the first question. Who are Laman and Lemuel?
Well, Laman and Lemuel. These are one of these questions, like, not to rag on your question, but I hate it. When we cover 1st Nephi, people will always say, who was Lehi? And like, no one wants to raise their hand because everyone knows the answer.
Right.
You know, anyway, we have Laman and Lemuel. They are the eldest sons of Nephi and Sariah.
Lehi and Sariah.
Did I say Nephi and Sariah?
You did say Nephi.
Why are you asking me to do this? eldest sons of Lehi and Sariah. I almost did it again. Lehi and Sariah. Interesting enough, like at this time, I feel like the birthright was a big deal in this time in Jewish history. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's just interesting that maybe where Laman gets a little angsty is because he sees Nephi getting all these, you know, revelations from the Lord when he feels like he should be the one that the Lord is communicating with and through.
It's heavily steeped in the culture, and might I say, particularly if you come from a wealthy family.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and even today, it's not a small deal, right? I mean, inheritance is a huge thing. How many kind of royal families do we know of in the world that are just perpetually wealthy forever and ever? I mean, there's big names out there, right? And you see squabbles over inheritances even today, even though it's, we don't live exactly in that culture, but we certainly live in an entitlement culture, right? And I think entitlement is certainly a theme that you see with Laman and Lemuel. And actually, I think one of the reasons why the Book of Mormon was written for today, because I think it speaks to one of the things that we struggle with pretty heavily today as well.
So would you guys define them as the first antagonists of the Book of Mormon, at least of the parts that we have? Would you define them as antagonists?
No.
By name, yes.
By name, yes.
But the thing is that in the Book of Mormon, they're not the first people that try and kill Lehi.
right? Yeah.
So they've got to get in line, apparently. But yeah, first all the people in Jerusalem decide that they want to kill Lehi, and then, you know, Laman and Lemuel kind of jump on the bandwagon.
What I think is interesting is that by name, at least in context of the scriptures, Laman and Lemuel, like Tyson said, aren't even mentioned until 2nd Nephi, until, I'm sorry, 1st Nephi chapter 2,
right.
which kind of surprised me when I was looking through this, but they're mentioned in the heading of 1st Nephi. And it explicitly says that Nephi writes the headings to each book,
not the chapter headings, but the headings to each book. Because it says at the very end, this is according to the account of Nephi, or in other words, I, Nephi, wrote this record.
For the small plates.
Yeah, for the small plates.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
For Nephi's record, for sure.
Right.
And so, I mean, he does name them there, but first of all, like, what do you think Lehi was saying to get people so mad that they'd want to kill him?
Repent?
Well, I mean, do you think that that message today would elicit the same response?
I do.
Yeah, I think I,
you think so?
I agree. Yeah, I think I agree with Tyson. Like, it's in a different way maybe than today, but like, people get really upset when you tell them what they're doing. It's not even telling. It's like when you imply what they're doing is wrong, people are going to get really upset. So a example I have of this is that I'm not going to like say any names or whatever, but except for my wife's name. So Amy talks a lot about repenting. How it doesn't mean that you've done something bad. It just means that you're trying to be better, right? There are things about us that we need to change. But when she tells us to a lot of people, there's a lot, she gets an adverse reaction a lot of the time because people are taking it like, you're saying I'm bad, you know, or you're telling me that what I'm doing is wrong. Like, I don't need to repent for that. You know, I think that's the right thing to do. And she comes back. So, well, it's not that it's not right. It's just like, we need to do better at this, like as a people, like we need to repent. We need to do better. And, you know, even if feelings of anger or feelings of revenge, things like that, you know, those are very natural feelings. And if somebody says, well, you need to repent for those, and somebody will get angry and say, no, I'm angry at that. What that person did to me was wrong. I'm angry and I want to get them back. Like, I think that we have a natural man reaction in us that if our status quo gets questioned or we feel like it gets questioned, we want to defend it.
Oh, for sure.
It takes a lot of intention to quiet that.
I'm not naive enough to say that the words of the prophets will never anger people or elicit bad response, because I mean, Twitter, but I don't know. Like,
he was probably insulting some powerful people too.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. I wonder if he got really specific with people too. It's like, hey, neighbor George, what are you doing with neighbor Alan's wife or whatever, you know, like calling out really specific things.
I mean, you look at Christ. I mean, that was the big thing that happened in Christ's time. I mean, they wanted to kill him pretty much right off. When he announced his ministry, they tried to kill him. I think human nature hasn't changed.
I don't think that Laman and Lemuel are there yet. Do they ever threaten to kill Lehi?
Oh, yeah.
Specifically?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't remember them. Nephi, for sure. I don't remember them wanting to kill Lehi.
Give me a second.
Yeah, let's pull this up.
I got it. There's two areas that I'm going to talk about where they mention Laman and Lemuel wanting to kill their father. It takes all of two chapters of the Book of Mormon to get there. Let me put it that way. So in 1 Nephi chapter 2, verse 12, and thus Laman and Lemuel, being the eldest, did murmur against their father, and they did murmur because they knew not the dealings of that God who had created them. Verse 13, neither did they believe that Jerusalem, that great city, could be destroyed according to the words of the prophets. And they were like unto the Jews who were at Jerusalem, who sought to take away the life of my father. So there's that one. They don't specifically say that they did try at that time, but they said they're like unto them. Now, if we go to chapter 16, where Ishmael dies, and you go to verse 37, and Laman said unto Lemuel, also unto the sons of Ishmael, behold, let us slay our father and also our brother Nephi, who has taken it upon him to be our ruler and our teacher, who are his elder brethren.
If I had just read the scriptures, as Amy likes to point out.
We can't fact check Tyson. Yeah, I've tried already. It doesn't work.
Well, let's talk about how we get there. In terms of overall arc of Laman and Lemuel, what really separated them in the end from Nephi and Sam is they just gave up. They gave up on the Lord. They chose to do the exact opposite thing that Nephi and Sam did, which was to not believe and to have hatred fill their hearts. And I guess the hatred filling their heart was more of a result, I think, of them abandoning their faith to run in the exact opposite direction because of everything that they had seen. If they didn't run in the exact opposite direction, I think that the cognitive dissonance would rub on them. It was too hard of a place to be in.
Circling back to what we were just talking about, the mob would like why they wanted to kill Lehi. I think Laman and Lemuel are kind of a micro example of how everybody else reacted, right? So, because they were told, I mean, by Lehi, but also more directly from Nephi, the things that they needed to repent of. And this is how they reacted, right? It's a lot easier when you're speaking to family and just two people rather than to a mob. That's why I think Nephi was able to get through a couple times. But I think you can look at Laman and Lemuel, like their journey, and that's probably what a general population would do.
Interesting. Well, it's another point that I see is the Lord always said that the Lamanites would be a stumbling block for the Nephites. And that happened from the beginning of our story.
And actually, that's the definition of an antagonist, right?
Right.
If the Nephites are protagonists.
Standing in the way of getting what the protagonist wants.
Exactly.
That's interesting. By the way, should we discuss before we really jump in what exactly a character arc is? If there are people who aren't film nerds, like writing nerds. The three of us. Yeah. Burgess, would you like to describe what a character arc is and why the heck we're talking about it like this?
Yeah, sure. So a character arc is, it's a great word for it because it's, you take where the character starts in the story and then along the way they make choices and the character wants something and they make choices based on this want. And as the story goes along, you can see them grow or not depending on what choices they make. And then at the end of the story, they have changed for better or worse. And so along the way, that is the arc from where they start to where they end. And normally, so they call it an arc because normally the drama and everything hits a peak. It gets stronger and stronger with each choice. And then there's a resolution of some sort and then everything calms back down. So that's generally what a character arc would be.
Just for fun, can we do a little background on Lehi's family?
Yeah, sure. You can. Would you mean like where Nephi came from?
Yeah, so here's the thing. So I've been reading up, some of this is speculative, so I mean, don't take it too serious. But I do think some of the things that I've read about Lehi's family are interesting. If you want background on this, Lehi in the Desert by Hugh Nibley is a great little book.
I've heard of him.
Yes. Nibley's great, and he's got a really interesting mind for these kinds of things. Essentially, so what do we know about Lehi's family? Well, apparently, they were able, on a moment's notice, to just get up and leave into a forsaken wilderness for an indefinite amount of time. We also know that all of their records were kept in some type of reformed Egyptian. Why would they care about the Egyptian language if they lived at Jerusalem? The reason that they cared about it is because they were living in an Egyptian-ruled society. That was the language of trade. And if you wanted to trade, then you would have to be able to travel in the wilderness for lots of days at a time in order to travel the trade routes. What they traded in isn't exactly clear. Nibley thinks that they were in agriculture. I think he takes some things out of the scriptures, how they talk about lands flowing with milk and honey and those types of things. I think he talks about them, you know, with different types of agriculture that existed at that time. I also, this wasn't Nibley that said this that I'm aware of, but another person that I read one time said he thought that they were actually trading in precious metals because having those metals and like having, so for instance, a steel bow that we know that Nephi had would not have been common at that time. And I guess at that time, they weren't really using coined money at that time in history. It would have been, you know, much more object-based, you know, types of metals, and it wasn't a common skill. We know that Nephi knew that to work with metal, he would need a bellows to craft tools and things like that. That wouldn't have been a very common trade unless your family was in that kind of a thing. But in any case, they were fluent in the language. It was important enough for multiple reasons, because if you wanted to trade you had to speak with the people that were the purse holders, right? And so Egyptian language in the house would have been very important for his children that would eventually take over his estate one day. So I think it's really, really interesting just to know a little bit of background, even if we were not really sure about what Lehi's family might have been involved in, because that to me informs the events that happen in the wilderness.
Yeah, it's interesting because now it's like they knew what to do in the wilderness, you know? It was part of life. So, yeah.
Well, our first, again, like I said, the first mention of Laman and Lemuel comes at a time where Lehi is rebuking them. So this is, they have fled into the wilderness. Okay, so this is 2 Nephi chapter 2. So I'll start reading from verse 8. And it came to pass that he called the name of the river Laman, and it emptied into the Red Sea, and the valley was in the borders near the mouth thereof. And when my father saw that the waters emptied into the Red Sea and the fountain of the Red Sea, he spake unto Laman, saying, Oh, that thou mightest be like unto this river, continually flowing into the fountain of all righteousness. And he also spake unto Lemuel, Oh, that thou mightest be like unto this valley, firm and steadfast and immovable in keeping the commandments of the Lord. And now he spake because of the stiff-neckedness of Laman and Lemuel. For behold, they did murmur in many things against their father, because he was a visionary man and had led them out of the land of Jerusalem, to leave their land of their inheritance, and their gold, and their silver, and their precious things, to perish in the wilderness. And this, they said, he had done because of the foolish imaginations of his heart.
So this is kind of where I was coming from initially. This is not new. 3 days into their journey, their dad, and this is not the first time that he has lectured them about their stiff-neckedness. This is something that has been going on for a long time. And also, they're likely adults. Nephi, give or take, is probably about 15 years old, and he's the youngest. And so they're men, and he knows them very well.
I found a Neil A. Maxwell talk, Lessons from Laman and Lemuel, from October 99.
Oh.
And he starts off with something that, to me, it was such a great point, and it casts a whole new light on the lessons that we learn from their choices, okay? I was told when you're writing an antagonist in a story, you have to write them as though they could stand at the gates of heaven and argue their point. Like, they actually believe what they were doing was the right thing. And so they need a set of principles, even if it's... Even if you don't agree with those principles, they have a set of principles that they stick to, okay? And they have a set of limitations. I think this defines one of Laman and Lemuel's limitations. So Neil A. Maxwell says, failing to understand the dealings of the Lord. So that line in there that says, they knew not the dealings of that God who created them, meaning his relations with and treatment of his children is very fundamental. Murmuring is but one of the symptoms and not the only consequence either. In fact, brothers and sisters, this failure affects everything else. When I read that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so true, right? If this is where everything gets started for them, and Tyson, it talks about like who they really are. They don't know how God deals with his children. And instead of making an effort to figure it out, that becomes very insulting to them, right? And they complain about it because they don't realize that God will speak through prophets. God will speak through parents. And sometimes you need to learn lessons from other people, right? And God will correct us when we are on the wrong path. And so I think this is so true. And this is something that like made me think about, try to take a different perspective on my life. Like when I get insulted by things, is to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, hang on, why am I reacting this way? It made me try to study more about the characteristics of God so I don't fall in this place.
I love the wording of they knew not the dealings of the God that created them, because in the introduction of the Book of Mormon, one of the first the second line of the introduction of the Book of Mormon is, it is a record of God's dealing with the ancient inhabitants of the Americas.
There you go.
So if you want to not be like Laman and Lemuel, you study the Book of Mormon,
right?
Yeah. And you become acquainted with the dealings of God with his people.
Well, it's interesting. This actually reminds me of something Johnny said in our last episode with Spencer. I remember when you were talking about your mission that you got really frustrated because it was the first time that you felt like you were doing something that you weren't any good at. And that if there had been something like that before in your life, you would have just quit.
Uh-huh.
But you didn't. Did you?
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
I did not.
And so it's interesting. So let's talk about sports for a second.
Yes.
We've all had a game where we're watching, pick your sport, football, basketball, whatever, where you're just watching your team and the other team is just having their way with them.
You're not talking about Baylor and BYU, are you, this year?
No, but I mean, I could point out any game, right?
Yeah.
But you're looking at them and you're just like, why can't my team just win, right?
Yeah, right.
Why can't they play less crappy?
But you don't realize that there's like something fundamental going on there. Like, well, it's because your offensive line footwork sucks.
Which they did against Baylor.
And so for the gospel, you can just get stuck and say, oh, these other people are just wrong. There's nothing wrong with me, you know, or whatever. Or you can be introspective and say, okay, they obviously know something that I don't. What is that? And how can I obtain that for myself? Because what's really interesting about that second chapter is not only do Lehi and Nephi try to reach out to them with their words, it says, but behold, Laman and Lemuel would not hearken unto my words, and being grieved because of the hardness of their hearts, I cried unto the Lord for them. You know, he's not trying to be the standard. He's just trying to like, look, the Lord's commanding us to do these things, and it's going to be for your best interest too. And when that didn't work, Lord, please help me to help them. And this is what a lot of people don't understand about the gospel is that when someone is trying to help you, it's not to cement their dominance. They want to help you because they want you to be happy. They have your best interest at heart. I'm not saying we do that perfectly all the time, but that's the spirit that the gospel teaches us. But from the world's perspective, if you're saying that someone else is doing something wrong, it's because you're trying to dominate them. You know, or you're trying to win, but it's just a totally different thing in the gospel, but they clearly don't understand that.
I think in this time, at least in verse, you read verse 8:17, right? I don't necessarily think that Nephi is even saying, look, Laman and Lemuel, shape up or get the heck out of here. You know, I think that he was actually saying like, look, guys, like I was on the fence about this too. I was, you know, I didn't totally believe Dad until I asked the Lord and I pled with him and he softened my heart and he, you know, he visited me with his spirit and you can do that too. You know, I don't necessarily think that Nephi is the leader quite yet. I don't feel like he's fitting that. He has that role quite yet.
He doesn't be, you can already see in his brothers though, like our brother's not better than us.
For right? sure. Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And that's the big thing. It's all about the social hierarchy.
Yeah. I also think that it could be like Laman and Lemuel are the older brothers. I wonder if part of them is a little taken back that the Lord didn't come to them first, even though he wouldn't because they are not showing faith in him. But I wonder if they're like, hey, I'm the birthright son. Like, why isn't the Lord talking to me about this?
Sure.
You know, feeling a little insecure that their younger brother is now, like I said, you know, being an example to them. So I don't know, like I remember my little brother would say like I would be a typical teenager and I get in a spat with my parents and my brother would be like, John, you need to apologize, and I'm like, you shut the heck up, like I'm not gonna do that. You know, like so again, this is in this case, like I said, I don't think that Laman and Lemuel are necessarily hating Nephi because they're telling him to ship up or to shape up. I think it's more just like, it's more just, uh-oh, this is what my potential is and I'm not there. And that makes me super uncomfortable. So I'm going to be a jerk.
Yeah. I think it's a very natural reaction. It's funny that you say that. Cause I remember the first time seeing one of my sister's first short films that she did. Mm-hmm. And it was so good. And like thinking like, oh my gosh, like she's better than me. Yeah. And like having that tinge of like jealousy, like trying to nitpick, I wanted to nitpick everything that was wrong with it. But thankfully I stopped myself. I didn't do that out loud. And I just was like, oh my gosh, like she's really, really good. But there is, there's that natural man reaction in there that's like, they can't be better than me. I'm older.
And while I think, you know, like, there are parts of Laman and Lemuel that none of us can relate to, unless you've seen an angel, you know, and after that still murmured against the Lord, or, you know, been shocked with the power of God. I think that there are points to where we get to, or none of us have tried to kill our fathers or our brothers who are more righteous than us, right?
Speak for yourself.
There are parts of this story that none of us are going to relate to. And I would imagine that not many of our listeners will be able to relate to either. But from where this all stems from, I think this makes Laman and Lemuel very human and very relatable. And it makes their tale even more cautionary.
So when we first decided on this episode, that's a really interesting point, because I thought that I was going to talk a lot about how I related more with Laman and Lemuel than Nephi, kind of going against the traditional grain as well. More, the more leading up to it, and then the more keeping this episode in mind, it became less of that and more how the story as a whole I relate to. I don't think it's as easy for me now to pick or even to separate myself as a Nephi or as a Laman and Lemuel, right? Because I think the story as a whole really defines us as humans. And I think in a way we can relate to some of the things that you're talking about as far as seeing an angel being shocked by the power of God. Because I feel like I've had those spiritual experiences that would be just as strong as those, you know?
Yeah.
But then still don't do the things I'm supposed to do, even directly relating to those spiritual experiences. So I think sometimes we limit ourselves by looking at the story in two sides, but seeing how we can kind of go between being a Laman and Lemuel and then being a Nephi, like how we can live this whole, the story as a whole in our own lives.
Well, I think too, just thinking of someone, like you're never going to be a parallel exactly with any one story, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
And that's what's so interesting about the scriptures is there's components that we can kind of dissect and say, okay, what happened here? We've got that same thing in the Doctrine and Covenants over and over again, right? We've got the Oliver Cowdery's, we've got the Martin Harris's, that we're not saying like, oh, it's just like so simplistic as evil versus good, but there's all of these complexities to situational happenings that were specific to them, but we can say, oh, how does that occur in my life? You know, how do I react to similar situations? Do I have similar predispositions as these people to certain things? Yeah. And how can I learn from their experience so that I don't make a similar mistake, or that I can take advantage of a particular opportunity, or whatever the case may be?
Why don't we keep going on in the timeline here? We've only made it through two chapters here.
And the third one's the big one.
Here's where their journeys really start to diverge here. So we have Lehi goes, receives a vision that his sons are supposed to go back to Jerusalem to retrieve the plates. I've had a lot of people, you know, a question people say like, hey, why do you think that the Lord just didn't get them as they were going? And I think we can answer that question soon, but I wanted to bring that up here just to kind of prime the pump.
So it's interesting. This is the way the gospel is. This is the whole thing. You get given a task. You're not given a direct course. You're like, okay, try this thing out. Oh, by the way, I've got this other thing I need you to do. Can you do that? And so they go back, they give them a lot of time to internalize what's going on. And I'm sorry, the gospel takes time. And the gospel takes effort. So I just think this whole sequence, you couldn't have scripted it better, in my opinion. This whole thing. So they go into the wilderness, they send them back. And what happens right when they get back? They're trying to figure out what they're going to do, right? Okay, we know what our goal is, but how do we go about this? We've got to go talk to this really powerful person. We're not sure exactly what needs to happen. We already know that the hierarchy of the family is one of the prime subtexts of the relationship between the brothers, right? We can already see what's coming. So the Lord is like, okay, Laman, I'm going to give you the first crack and see if the birthright means as much to you as you think it does. They draw lots, and the lot fell on Layman.
Is this an appropriate time to bring up how annoying their voices are in the Book of Mormon cartoon?
Oh, that's good. That's true.
They're all snively and, hey, our father's not, he's not, we're going to bring him right back.
Right.
It's like the orcs on the Two Towers when they're talking about trying to eat Merry and Pippin.
Yeah, we want some meats.
That's how I feel like Lemon and Lemon's voices are. Just the slimiest, most annoying voices ever.
So it's interesting. There's all these, the Lord scripts it in such a way that a lot of these things that are obviously on their minds are being addressed. Like, mm-hmm. Layman, do you really want this responsibility? You know, and so they go through that. But also it's interesting. Nephi also in some degree fails, but there's another aspect to it because he decides like, okay, let's gather all of our belongings. I believe this is why the Lord left them here, so that we could have something to barter the plates for. And so they go and do that. Now, that didn't turn out well either, but very interesting. I have read in different places that because we know eventually that Nephi is going to kill Laban, right? But it's interesting how the Lord sets that up. The Lord makes it so that Laban has wronged Nephi in particular, but Lehi's family a couple of times already. By the time that he finally kills him, Laban has already sought Nephi and his family's life at least once that we know of. So they try and kill him and take their property, right? So I've read that kind of under Jewish custom, or under the custom at Jerusalem, that you were justified in taking someone's life if they had wronged you in these fashions. And so the journey is important because the Lord is keeping everything in order. And sometimes that means we have to suffer. And we see mm-hmm. that over and over again in the scriptures. But to me, that was incredibly interesting because all of this had to happen so that justice could be satisfied.
That's interesting. I just always assumed that, again, that the two ideas that they come up with just go south. I always just assumed that, look, Lehi family, I'm going to get you through this and you're going to know it's me. I guess we're missing a critical part here. So they go back after Laban steals their stuff. They go back. They hide themselves in a cave. Laman and Lemuel start beating Sam and Lehi. The stick Nephi. Angel appears to them and says, stop. Don't you know that your brother is... I think his words kind of make it worse. But they say, you know, it says, know ye not... Why do you smite your brothers with a rod? Know ye not that the Lord has chosen them to be a ruler over you because of your iniquities? Now go back up into Jerusalem again, and the Lord will deliver Laban into your hands. So that all happens, and I can understand why Laman and Lemuel are upset. One, because they're upset because their inheritance just got stolen. Because it was Nephi's idea, but also the angel literally called them out and said, look, Nephi is now he's a leader over you because of your wickedness. And that doesn't ever feel good. But getting to this point, again, I always assumed that attempt one and two didn't work because it was their own ideas. And the Lord's like, look, I am going to do this for you. So go back up and I'll let you know how it's going to go down, but go.
But it's interesting, though. He doesn't say that you were wrong to try.
Oh, right? For sure not. Yeah.
And so I think sometimes the not understanding the dealings of God comes back to all of this, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to have totally. To try and go through some pain.
The Lord loves effort.
Yeah. That doesn't for mean sure. I'm not with you. Mm-hmm. And that to me is the important lesson of this whole thing, is that when you're in a spot in your life and you just like can't win for losing, it's not because the Lord's not with you. It's just because this is part of the process.
Yep.
Right? It also doesn't mean you're never going to win. Right?
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that things aren't going to go wrong.
Yeah. And I think that one of the questions that you had brought up for this, asking why in the sense of like, why does this have to happen? Why is this happening to me? Isn't effective in our lives, right? As we're going through the trial sometimes, for example, in using this example, why do we have to go back? Why couldn't we have just gotten it on the way? And then being frustrated at that. knowing the dealings mm-hmm. of God help us to say, like, okay, we'll just have to go back and get it. You know, let's right, just yep. be part of the plan, and we'll have to figure out why later, you know?
Because you notice they don't murmur when they go back to get daughters, right?
That is true. They do not. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we already passed, that Lehi says that Laman and Lemuel murmur because they think it's a hard thing that I am asking them to do.
Right, yeah.
When they don't understand that it's not me that's asking this, it's the Lord commanding it. Mm-hmm. So there's hint number one. Well, there's maybe not number one, but there's a direct thing of saying, hey, they don't understand the dealings of God. It's not me that's asking this. The Lord is asking you this. I wouldn't want you to go back if we didn't have to.
Right.
Right.
And it's obvious, too, their heart's not in it, right? At every point, they're just like, can we please be done with this?
Let's just go back. Like, we tried. It's fine. Let's go. This is stupid. Yeah.
Nephi is the one that's kind of forcing the issue, and that's why they're mad at him. Is like, Nephi, because Nephi is not the reason they're there. The reason they're there is because the Lord spake to them through Lehi. But Nephi won't let it go.
Yeah.
Nephi gets it. Nephi understands that he's going to mm-hmm. have to put forth some effort. They're just done.
I agree. And again, I felt that before where it's like, ugh, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I totally get that. But again, immediately after seeing an angel, this is what they say. They say, and after the angel had departed from them, Laman and Lemuel again began to murmur, saying, how is it possible that the Lord will deliver Laban into our hands? Behold, he can command 50. Yea, he can even slay 50. Then why not us? This is where I hope that, again, Laman and Lemuel would differ from me. I would hope that if I were to see an angel, that I would be like, okay, I'm just going to shut up at best, you know, or at worst. I'm like, okay, just go do what you want.
And here's the thing, like when you're, you know, we were talking about how Laman and Lemuel were just done. So I had a really hard day last week, as we all know, right? Like last week was really...
Everyone else knows now.
Yeah, now everybody else does. But as you guys know, like last week at a really hard time, and there, I would say that there were a couple of days last week where I would use that as a definition, like, you know what? I'm just done. I don't want any more. And I can say with 100% certainty that if I saw an angel and the angel said, like, you need to go do this, I'd be like, no, I'm done. Like somebody else can do that. Like, and I totally, that was the place that I was in. I think we all go through those times. There are times where, whether it's being a parent, whether it's being a student, whether it's could be anything, right? That we're just doing the things to get through the day. And that's okay. However, one thing that I think I learned from this story is that it's not sustainable, you know, like it's okay to go through those days. We're all going to do it. It's part of being imperfect humans. It's part of being here on Earth. However, it's not. Yeah. Like we can't be complacent in it. You know, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. not sustainable. We have to grow out of it soon. Everybody's at their own pace, but it has to be a growth sometime.
So I'd like to talk to you guys about an experience I had one time, and I still don't really fully understand it, but I remember one day, it was actually the day of state conference, and we'd had a big snowstorm, so it was several years ago, but it was state conference morning, and oh my gosh, we got a ton of snow, and I had gotten up early to try and, you know, get our house, you know, shoveled, and it was just, my back was done. And I was kind of finishing up and getting ready to go back inside. And I just got this impression, Tyson, you need to go shovel this other person's driveway. And I'm like, okay, I just need 15 minutes to go, you know, to take a break. And I remember distinctly hearing, like, it almost could have been a voice. There's not time. You got to go now. And just as I was standing there, I'm like, okay. Like, all right, I'll go do it. And so I did it. And it was, you know, I don't know why it was important enough, like, to tell me, like, yeah, you got to go and you got to do it right now. And I know you're tired, but you still have to do it. You need to trust me. And that's not like a big deal. Like, shoveling snow is not like some huge deal, but at that moment in time, for me, it was important enough that I needed, you know, a pretty strong push to go do it and to realize that I needed to do it. But I think there is a gospel lesson there that says sometimes you're going to be asked to do something at the exact moment that you're really not predisposed to do it. And there is something special about that. And I don't know exactly what that is, but I do know that it's going to happen. And I just think we need to mentally and spiritually prepare ourselves to be willing to do it.
Being prepared is, you know, the operative thing there, because if you're not prepared, then when the time comes, time for preparation is done.
Yeah. You get it. Like, you were prepared to hear that message. You knew what that said, you know?
Interesting. Okay. So let's move on to chapter 4. Do you think if Laman and Lemuel and Sam join Nephi that this works? Or do you think that they were meant to stay without the walls?
I think it was Nephi's privilege. It's hard because you could read that as thinking that Sam wasn't somehow worthy of it. And I don't believe that. But I just think that this was Nephi's calling. I think he was given that privilege just because of the great effort and faith that he had displayed up to that point. And I don't think he was going to be denied the fulfillment of the miracle. Now, it's interesting, when he gets to Laban, it was obvious he didn't want the miracle to be fulfilled this way.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
And that's going to happen too, by the way. You know, the Lord, he does things according to the way he knows things need to happen. And again, we just need to be prepared to do whatever it is that's required of us. So I think it was a learning experience for Nephi too, and one that's going to become important as the Nephite-Lamanite story continues. But this was his privilege.
I've told the story about this. Is every like missionary that has served a foreign speaking mission has a time where they do not understand a conversation that's happening, and they completely butcher what like the conversation goes in a completely terrible way because they don't understand what's going on. Have I told you the story about this chapter?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, while we're here, we might as well. So we had this investigator, and she was amazing. She was reading the scriptures and praying every day. You could tell that she wasn't quite there ready to join the church, but she was getting there. And it was so fun after like a year of being on a mission to finally have a progressing investigator that was really putting in the work and would end up in baptism. I knew she would, but she called one time on, she called the church, and that's where I was. Or maybe we were waiting for an appointment, and I was like, I'm going to call, her name is Sayuri. And I was like, I'm going to call her and just see how things are going. And she's like, yeah, I'm reading the book, man, it's great, but I've got a question. I'm like, okay, great. And then she spouts off, I know she's talking about Laban and Lemuel and this story here. I mean, Laban and the plates, and I know that this is what she's talking about. She keeps asking this question, and the way we're taught in the MTC that if you don't understand what someone's saying, you follow it up with, you try to rephrase their sentence, and followed by the phrase, "Toyu wake desu ka?" Which means, is that what you're saying? And so I do this no less than 5 times. And she's like, and eventually I come to her, like, are you worried that if you die before you get baptized, like, what's going to happen? She's like, yep. And I'm like, well, that's fine. Like, it's kind of weird, but we'll go this way. But she said, but I was like, yeah, like when you die, if you die before you get baptized, we can do something called baptisms for the dead. It'll be fine. Like, you'll be able to receive this baptism in the afterlife. So the next lesson is a joint lesson with our bishop. And finally, he's like, you know, how was your Book of Mormon reading going? She's like, really, it's really good. You know, I called, Elder Maruji called me, and he walked me through this. Then she's like, well, and I had this question. He's like, what if Elder Maruji was commanded by the Lord to kill me, would he do it? And I'm like, wait, that's what you are asking? She's like, uh-huh. And I said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I did not understand what was going on at all.
That's so awesome.
She ended up getting baptized, her and her her twin sons. It was amazing. But so that is, sorry to derail the conversation for 2 minutes, and I know we've been going for a long time anyways, but now that we're here, we might as well have my embarrassing story about language barriers.
That's so great.
It was not.
I don't know if I was ever asked that question.
It's a pertinent question. Yeah. It is a pertinent. Like, I'm just so happy that my sons didn't ask me this week when we're talking about, or last week when we were talking about Isaac and Abraham, you know, Dad, what if the Lord commanded you to sacrifice me? Would you do it? I don't know. That's a question for another episode.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Nephi does not want to do this for sure. And he has to convince himself to do it. Actually, no, the angel eventually has to. And he tries to do it himself, but he just can't. So interesting. So let's go back to Laman and Lemuel. Is that cool?
Yeah.
So here they are waiting outside the wall, and there's a man dressed in Laban's clothing with his servant. Now, have we talked about this? Like, why? Like, do you think that his armor had to have been just absolutely drenched in blood? So does this mean that this was a normal thing, or is there another explanation for this?
I suspect that the clothes came off before he beheaded him.
Yeah. The way I think I've said this before, I don't remember.
This seems like a familiar conversation, but we've done almost 50 episodes, so.
Right, yeah. So I think happened, like, with Nephi is that he saw Laban drunk, had the idea to take off his armor, took off his armor, and then he got the impression, you need to kill him. And that's when he did it. Like, he was going to walk away just dressed as Laban, but then...
Oh, interesting. Oh, so it's a, hey, take off his clothes, put him on, so that way you can impersonate Laban.
Right.
That makes a lot more sense.
And then he went back and killed him. And then, like, that solves the problem with the blood and stuff like that. And it still works with the narrative, you know.
Or he's walking away. Well, he's got to he's got to do it before he goes to Zoram.
You're right. He would go, he stood up to go to walk away and then got that impression or something along those lines is how I think it happened.
That paints an interesting scenario, because I get to see Nephi being like, man, this armor's sweet. Pulls out this sword and he's kind of like waving it around like, this is a sweet sword.
Right. Sure.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You sure you want me to do this? Like, yeah. That's interesting. Okay, so Laman and Lemuel and Sam start running away because they assume they see Laban and his servant running towards them. And really, this is why I think that they needed to be, at least their whole camp and their party needed to be 3 days away before this happens, because they had to kill someone and they had to kill kind of an important person so they could just run off without anyone really knowing what happened.
Although, interestingly, he was an important person and it was certainly a scandal, but how much could anyone have really cared about him if they would have just let him lie drunk in the street for however long?
You know, yeah, there's Laban again.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What a drunkard.
Yeah, he had an army of certain amount of people, but I don't know that he was well-loved.
Yeah, that's true. So we have, their reaction is obviously surprise.
This is good times for Laman and Lemuel because they were able to accomplish their mission. They didn't have to, go risk their lives again, and they can go back into the desert and be done. So they were in their happy place.
So they go back, and I think the next really mention of them is when they return in chapter 7 is when they return to Jerusalem for wives.
Yep.
And really their last, the next time they're mentioned is when they start murmuring with the house of Ishmael.
Right. Cause now they've got company.
Yeah. It's people to validate their situation.
Yeah. And it appears that Ishmael's family is similarly divided. And so that's interesting because here's the thing I often wonder. Do we have Laman and Lemuel if we don't have Nephi and Sam? Or do we have Laman and Lemuel without either one of those? Right? So if Laman was the only person who was disgruntled and he didn't have a brother to be on his side, do we still have the predicament that we end up with?
Interesting.
That's a good question.
Does misery need company?
Are you asking on the other side, if there's no Sam, would there not be a Leah? Like, do you think that Laman and Lemuel would have squashed Nephi?
I think the composition of that family was imminently important.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I agree with that, because I don't think you can have one without the other. Maybe not in either circumstance, because you can probably have if you have just a layman, you could have just a Nephi. However, having a layman and Lemuel and a Nephi and Sam, or even you could go further, as well, Jacob really doesn't influence anything until much later. So I think adding a second person on either side is, I think it is an important dynamic.
So when we're talking about a character arc, I think it's important just to keep in the mind the impact each of the parties is having on each other.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good point.
And this is one of the first lessons of the gospel. There must needs be opposition in all things. And that's an opportunity for a learning experience. I'm not trying to make everything layman against Nephi, but I think the construct that we find ourselves in has a way of ferreting out both the best and the worst in us, depending on how we react to it.
The question that I've always had in this chapter is, if Laman and Lemuel hate it so much, why don't they go home? To me, it's like, look, guys, we've been through this. Home is 3 days away. You've walked the journey twice already. If you hate it so much, just go. Like, leave. Why are you still here?
Well, Nephi tells him that, right? On the way back from getting the daughters, that's what Nephi said. Like, if you have choice, go back.
Why do you think that they stay? Like, what? Why do you think that they... I mean, because honestly, I think that Laman and Lemuel go the first time just because they don't think this is a long-term thing. At least that is an explanation that I have, that in my heart that I have. You know, that they're going to come back eventually. But now they know it's for real. Why do they not go back?
Well, there's a carrot, right? This isn't just them following. There's a promise that goes along with this, right? Their father has told them that the Lord is going to give them a promised land.
Promised land? Right? Oh, interesting. And they do already believe in Moses, because Nephi references that later. So that's what they're holding on to, is that the wherever they're going to be going is going to be amazing. And they trust Lehi to deliver on that.
And they're going to be the rulers.
Hmm. True.
And I think that's definitely enough to get them over the hump of going. And then once they're all their inheritance is stolen anyway, like, they don't really have anything to go back to.
Right.
Right. At least in their eyes.
True.
Right. It's not like they can go back to like a job or whatever. Like, all their family's gone. And that means a lot more than it does today, because they're not going back to anything.
Well, and their social status is solely based on their parents. Right.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have the status that they want without their parents' influence.
Interesting. Gal. Again, this show will be so interesting when we can just have Laman and Lemuel and Nephi and Sam on the show in the podcast in the clouds, guys. This is going to be so good. Again, I think that this is a pretty good place for us to break. I think we've got a full episode of this. So we will go on to part two next week. But final thoughts on Laman and Lemuel part one up to this part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about before, it all goes back to God's dealings with knowing how God deals with his children, I think is the big theme and the mm-hmm. motivation behind mm-hmm. a lot of these choices.
And I guess the question is that I'd like to ask myself is, I'm going to be rebuked, and I have been rebuked like Laman and Lemuel have before. How am I going to respond? How is my spiritual preparation? Is it going to be good enough? Is it good enough now that if the Lord comes down and says, you need to shape up or else A, B, and C? And how am I going to respond to that? And that's the question I'd like to ask myself over the next week.
And I think for me, it's just knowing that being a disciple is not easy. Laman and Lemuel had an example of that. They saw their dad about get killed. And I think they saw Nephi doing the hard work. But for whatever reason, that never resonated with them on a deep enough level that they wanted to take that journey on. I think they had an idea of what they wanted their lives to be like, and this was interfering with that. And so I think that kind of explains the attitude that they had. I think that explains the anger that they exhibited. And I think that there were things about the life that they thought that they were going to have that they were just not willing to let go of. And so I think for me, it's just learning to focus on the things that have eternal significance and not holding on so much to the shiny things that are dangled in front of us by the world. I think those are distractions, those are temptations, and I think Laman and Lemuel is the cautionary tale of not caring about those things more than we have to.
I like it. Stay tuned for part two coming next week. That was pretty awkward, wasn't it? Well, there you have it. Now, what did you think? Hopefully it wasn't as bad as a poorly prepared Sunday school lesson. Let us know what you think about Laman and Lemuel's journey this far. Shoot us an email at blessedrefreshments123@gmail.com and be sure to subscribe wherever you're listening so you can catch part two next week.
Please bless us to get home safely.